When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come. Longing just to bring something that's of worth, that will bless your heart.
Hi, this is Chaplains Timothy Burdick
and Stephanie Burdick,
and we'd like to welcome you to the Visions of Love podcast, reaching out to the spiritually and physically blind throughout the world.
Hello, folks, and welcome to our podcast. Today we're featuring part one of an interview with Justin Hutchins, head of the Kenya Orphanage Project. And we hope you will enjoy this interview and stay tuned for part two in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless you.
It's all about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've made. When it's all about you, it's all about you.
Thank you.
To contact us, all you need to do is go to mynvm.com.
NVM is an acronym for New Vision Ministries.
If you want to contact us, there's a contact form on the website. Or if you don't know Christ or need prayer, please call 507-369-6861. Thank you.
And now for part one of our interview with Justin Hutchins.
Well, hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us. Today we have an honored guest, Justin Hutch, and he's going to tell us a little bit about Kenya from our missions trip that he took. Justin, can you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about the church?
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. Thank you, and I appreciate the honor of being on your podcast today. My name's Justin Hutchins, and a lot of people know me by Hutch. In Kenya, I guess I'm a pastor, a father, and many other hats and names that they decided to give me, but Justin Hutchins. The church that I attend is Vida Church in Mesa, Arizona. And Vida Church has an orphanage project called KOP, which is the Kenya Orphanage Project. And we had the honor of being one of the first groups to go with the church and do some missionary work out in Kenya, Africa. The Kenya Orphanage Project actually started almost a decade, I think it's over a decade ago, with that church. The pastors, Ben and Kara Diaz, started that orphanage, and it's called, here in the United States, we know the orphanage name as Heaven on Earth Homes. And in Kenya, they have a organization called New Promise. So, but it's under the Kenya Orphanage Project at Vida Church.
So just for some background, how would you describe the average church in Kenya? We're pretty spoiled as Americans.
You know, I didn't know what to expect when I went out there, Tim, and the things that we take for granted here. To describe the average church from a physical standpoint, it's usually a mud or a tin building with sticks holding, erecting the building. And when I say sticks, I'm talking about the lumber is literally just sticks. It's not even, you know, cut square pieces of board.
Wow.
The majority of them. And tin roofs, aluminum roofs. The chairs are usually plastic chairs, you know, that we'll have sometimes for outdoor furniture, the cheaper style
right.
Outdoor furniture. And that's the chairs that you see, and, you know, there will be a pulpit the majority of the time. And the signs are all hand-painted, like wood, and they're definitely not sealed or anything like that. So the names are usually pretty faded on the front of the church. You don't even know the church name when you're walking in. I experienced that. There's no running water at the churches, no bathrooms inside the churches. You know, there's the sound equipment usually is pretty distorted. That's your average church there. It's just a building where people go and worship. But I would love to explain the people of the church. They'll start worship at approximately 5 to 6 a.m., and they will start singing for 4 to 5 hours prior to even starting a lesson.
That goes into my next question. How would you, you know, describe the Kenyan's faith? Is it more alive than the average American's? Just a nominal Christian.
So again, it's hard to give an overall generalization because I was only there for about 7 days in Kenya. I will say there's two extremes in Kenya, and that's an extreme faith in Jesus Christ or an extreme faith in witchcraft. And a lot of superstition kind of on both ends. You know, unfortunately, all Christians aren't perfect. I think that's why we need Jesus. But I will tell you, the energy that they have for the Lord is so sincere, and the gratitude that they have is at a much deeper level than I've ever experienced in the United States.
Wow. In what ways would you say counting the cost is a reality from your perspective, from what you saw?
If you're into witchcraft, you know, on that side of the fence in Kenya, I mean, they have it out. You know, the demons are alive for the Christianity and the Christians there, and they will do anything to slander name, to make you non-prosperous, etc. And, you know, trusting Christ in a impoverished country like that and not seeing the fruit, if you will, from the outside is definitely a cost. But I think that most of the Christians there are pretty free. So I know that in parts of the world, their Christianity, you know, they're murdering Christians, etc. Kenya isn't that part of the world. You're pretty free and liberal to worship Jesus.
What are some of the challenges that they face? You know, either on a spiritual or physical level, it doesn't, you know, we're just trying to get a picture.
Absolutely. So I'll give you a picture. When I was there and we did some evangelism work, because I had the honor of teaching at a church while I was there on a Sunday and bringing a message. And we went and evangelized the day before in some of this, the villages that were there. And I even got a video when I came home of the pastor that I became very good friends with. His name is Pastor Moses. He's with the Nehemiah Worship Church of Kenya. And he sent me a video of his family eating supper at about 8:30 at night. They had no light. I could not see them. And he's like, this is my family. Wow. Going around the room. They have no electricity, no running water in most of the houses, and they're eating supper around in these chairs, and they are so filled with joy and just gratitude and happy. And he's showing, introducing me to his family. And that's just the day in the life. When we were there, we stayed at one of the nicer hotels, and they gave us white towels for some reason. Because the second day, the towel, I was looking at it, I was like, are we really that dirty? And then I realized that the water is actually not even filtered. It's just
really
dirty water that you shower in. You know, they get it from the river. So, yeah, it's definitely a different world. And they don't drink coffee there much. So they don't have
American
coffee.
Well, that lets
coffee.
Me out.
Yeah. I got used to African tea.
It just go on with some of these things because I want to talk about how in other ways that trip has been an eye-opener for you.
Yeah, the evangelism, that was the biggest eye-opener. Everywhere we went, people would wave to us. We were the only non-Kenyans for miles and miles and miles. Everywhere we went, we were in Webuye, and there wasn't a single person like us there. You know, we were the only Americans, and they were all Kenyans. There's no, you know, mixed races in that region. And every single person that saw us would wave to us, and they were excited to see us. And when we went and evangelized, they would welcome us in at every house that we passed, welcomed us in their house. And you would go inside their house and they wouldn't have a couch. I mean, most of them, right? Some of them had couches, some of them had some chairs, and some of them even had different rooms. But the majority of the houses were about the size of a small bedroom, maybe 10 by 10. And they have a little fire pit going on the ground in the dirt in the corner. And they would welcome you in and you're standing there and you're going, okay, what do I do now? You know, and they're like, welcome to my house. They would say, Karibu, Karibu, that means welcome in Swahili. And you would sit there and you'd go, is there anything that I can do for you? And they're like, yes, you're here. Pray for me. Bless my house. And you're like, okay. And, you know, God forbid you know, can I get a drink of water or use your restroom? They don't have one. So it was just very eye-opening. I did not realize the level of poverty that is there and just how corrupt, you know, some of the government officials are in leaving the people impoverished. At the same time, I didn't realize that you can be grateful without having things like that.
Wow. Now that is something. Going back to Pastor Moses, can you share some special stories, you know, about some of the things that he's going through?
Absolutely. So Pastor Moses, he said he had a church of about 80 people showing up, which is really big because there's a lot of churches on Sunday. And 80 people were showing up in his church, and he was in a building that was rented by a landowner. So he was looking and raising funds to get, and that's why he didn't have electricity, because he didn't want to pay for the electricity when he could be building a church. So he figured he didn't need it. So he saved up some money, and he found a landowner. And the land transitions, you know, real estate transitions, etc., are much different in Kenya than they are in the United States.
it's more of a handshake, you own the lot, etc., if you don't know a government official, which is far and few people. So he gave a lot of money to somebody that owned land, and it was taken from him and said that you never gave me anything. In fact, his name was Turner slandered, and Pastor Moses was shunned and basically said that, no, you didn't give me money, you're a liar. And the church, the congregation, took that as God was cursing him, so they wanted to flee, when none of it was true. So Pastor Moses had this resentment in his heart towards this man, and that resentment kept him stuck for approximately 8 months by the time that we had arrived. It had happened in early January, I believe, or maybe December of last year. And we were there in August, and he said, after my teaching, the Holy Spirit put it on my heart to say, hey, something's going on here. You know, somebody needs to let go of something. So we did sort of a healing, a sozo session with the church congregation, 15, 20 people there. At the end of the sozo, I was like looking at Moses, and I said, Moses, you have something so heavy on you. And he just started crying because we were talking about, if there's anybody who came to mind when you're holding on to a resentment that you can't let go, you can't forgive. And this man came in his picture. And that was the resentment that was keeping him stuck. And as soon as we arrived home, after we did that, he just fell to his knees and just started weeping. And he was like, I can't believe I've been so ungodly in this. Just because he took from me doesn't mean that I don't love him. You know, he wanted the heart of God for this man, and he received it in that moment. We get back to the United States a few days later, and he sends me a message over WhatsApp and says, you'll never believe what happened. The next morning, I woke up, I saw that man. He was the first person I saw when I went to town. And I walked right up to him, and I told him how much I loved him, I forgave him, and I put hands on him and started praying for him, and we both began to weep. All about
you. That concludes part one of this interview. We hope that you're enjoying it, and please stay tuned for part two of this interview in 2 weeks. Thank you. Thank you.
hope you've enjoyed this, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.